Case 16 from the Gateless Barrier. Yunmen said, "See how vast and wide the world is. Why do you put on your 17-piece robe at the sound of the bell?" Just want to see if you're listening. Wu Men's comment, "There are not 17, there are 7. All you Zen students training in the way, don't be victimized by sounds. Don't follow up on forms. You may have realization on hearing a sound or enlightenment on seeing a form. That's natural. But don't you know that true Zen students can ride sounds and veil forms? They see all and sundry clearly. They handle each and everything deftly. Perhaps you are such a person, but tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? And if you have transcended sound and silence, what do you say at such a point? If you listen with your ear, it's hard to understand. If you hear with your eye, you are intimate at last." Wu Men's verse. "With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are disconnected. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, all things are disconnected." So here we are in the middle of our retreat. It, to me, seems no matter how long or short the retreat is, the middle is still the middle. The light of the tunnel may be a long way off from where we came in, and perhaps seeing the end, but here, this moment, this day, we say 3 days, we say 1 week, we say a whole lifetime. And this wonderful koan that we've been exploring, this sound of the bell, and this wonderful first sentence, the "See how vast and wide the world is." Part of the gift of this ancient practice, this ancient practice of sitting upright, this ancient practice of coming together to train, to support each other, to retreat. We step back from our life. And we have this opportunity for this time where so much is taken care of. Our tenzos and Dharma brothers and sisters prepare the food. Our loving servers bring it to us. What a gift to be to look at the schedule and say, "Oh, what is the time now?" And we hear the han, and we come to the zendo. And we hear about this this world that is vast and wide. We have all caught glimpses of the beauty. Each one of us born human. Each one of us appeared how wonderful each one of us did our part while we were in our mother's womb. Our little beating heart and our little tiny undeveloped brain. Just knowing how to breathe. Just knowing how to beat the heart. Not knowing who we were or where we are. Not knowing. Complete not knowing. And as we entered this world, of course, each one of us was met. Each one of us had people who took care of us. People who probably didn't do a very good job, judging from all of us sitting in this room, judging from myself. But they did enough. They did their very best. Without the people who met us and took care of us before we knew anything, we would not be here. And then the self comes, and we begin to understand what's going on around us in this complex and symbolic world, and we find our way, we figure out all these different things. And we are carried away by sounds and colors, carried away by the appearance of things. Go to college, get a job, be somebody. Look at the sticker and try to be who you think you should be. But I think we come to this practice out of both some sense, some glimpse, some taste that there might be something else. And then, as we were saying yesterday, come out of some great failure and disappointment. All our strategies have not given us the ground to stand on. Just when we think we have it sorted out, something else happens. So this first part, this first sentence, the world is vast and wide. Here in our practice of stillness and silence, we are invited into this world. All of us say we long for freedom. We long to wake up. But for some of us, as things begin to settle down, we begin to get a little nervous. Well, where's the entertainment? Where's the great problems I know I have? And we go running back. But over time, as we sit and breathe in and breathe out, we learn to tolerate and maybe even appreciate this, the vastness and wideness. This place where there is not an orientation. Or the orientation is simply what is arising in this moment. It does not fixate. And we see the desire to fixate, the desire to make it something. And what is it? And I will get it. This begins to wear off. We are both the one polishing the tile, and we are the tile that is being polished by our life. No way to avoid it. Go to retreat. Don't go to retreat. No escape. This world, vast and wide, we wear down, our defenses are worn down, we get exhausted and tired, we get discouraged, we get confused, these are all incredibly important places. Robert Aitken's wonderful gathas that we recited. When I panic at losing my bearings, I vow with all beings to acknowledge the error is panic, not losing familiar ground. So when we begin to lose our bearings, when our whatever our practice is or whatever our understanding is begins to wear thin, begins to wear out, of course, naturally, we hold on tighter or we try to jump to something else. We back out. Well, this must be wrong. I must be doing it wrong. Something. The teachers must be wrong. That's what it is. I'll go up and tell them. but the invitation is to, when this happens, to do nothing. See, taste, sense how this vast and wide world, you have never been separate from it. Always been held inseparable from this great freedom. So this is the starting point of the koan. This world of freedom, this world of light and life, present at each moment. And so this is where the koan starts, and Melissa will now explain where it goes.
It's always exciting to be the second person to talk in a shared Dharma talk. I never know whether the first part will just be so complete that I'll have to start and give a completely different one. But in this case, it's not true.
Thank you.
Although I'd like to look a little bit more into the matter of the 17 pieces. So how vast and wide the world is, and this feeling that David's pointing to that's so familiar to us of being lost in this wide world, sometimes not knowing whether we're coming or going. The feeling that the world is spinning around us so fast sometimes, there's so much to do, or we don't belong in this world. Sometimes we feel this. There's a great feeling of confusion, of destabilization. And this can happen in Zen practice. In fact, I once heard Josh say that that's the purpose of Zen practice, to destabilize us. And I felt when he said that, yes, that's my belief too. There is something that happens when we encounter other people who share our own heart minds in such a profound way, not in the ordinary way, not blind anymore to the secret practices, but awake to them. Oh, yes, all this time I've been wanting this thing, but there's this other thing that I don't know that is beginning to present itself to me. And I'm not doing it. It's not happening because of me making my fantasy reality. Instead, it's a way of turning towards reality as it is and receiving what is continuously offered by this wide world. When I first started practicing Zen, one of the books that was meaningful to me was a little book that I'm holding in my hands now called Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. And the other day I looked for it because I wanted to give a talk about a story in it that referred to the sound of the single hand. But then I realized that this book, which was compiled and translated by Paul Reps, I believe, has a complete translation of the Gateless Barrier, the Gateless Gate, our koan collection that came to us from the 13th century teacher Wu Men, who gave us the beautiful poem that that Josh explicated so well on the first day. It feels like weeks ago, but it was just, I think, yesterday. The poem in this translation is almost completely different. And I love this about translation. I don't see it's a problem at all to have a number of different translations that appear to say different things, because we know a little bit that the Chinese language is open to interpretation. It doesn't have the same kind of grammatical structure that we have. And ancient Chinese, or at least Chinese from the Tang and Sung dynasties, which is when all these koans were created and written down, is not like modern Chinese. So anyone who attempts to translate is in trouble right from the beginning. So to find a translation of this verse that was so different, and yet it spoke to me very deeply when I read it. And before I read it, I want to say a couple of things about the regular translation, which says that before realization, or I guess after realization, all things are one family. Before realization, all things are separate and distinct, and then reverses those. So separate and distinct in this translation is very different. The translator says that whatever that word was in Chinese means being a stranger. Being a stranger. And I think so much of the phrase stranger in a strange land that comes from the Bible, but I first encountered it in a science fiction book. That feeling is so familiar. It's one of the things that drove me to Zen practice. I didn't buy into the way that I was taught the world was. I knew that it was different, and I kept having intimations of it, even as a child. And when I finally found Zen in my adulthood, I was so moved by meeting a teaching that reflected my own experience, this great mirror of the teaching. And I knew this. There's something that I knew was right in this teaching, and it's kept me hooked ever since. This feeling of being a stranger, when the legend we tell in Zen, when the Buddha was born, he took a few steps. He was a very precocious baby, and pointed up and pointed down and said, "In heaven above and earth below, I am the only one." My first teacher gave that to me as my first koan. It's not about being narcissistic. I'll give you a little hint. What does it mean to be the only one? And there's another phrase that I love from a commentary on a later koan, where a teacher says, "I thought I was alone in the universe, but I see that you too are alone in the universe." This is the kind of companionship we have in Zen. This is what it means to be together. And David pointed out, and Josh pointed out, varieties of this togetherness. And in the translation we use by Robert Aitken in the verse, he uses the words, all things are one, or all things are one family. It's very similar here. We interpret it to mean that all things are equal. This is sort of a reference to an experience we might have of emptiness, where everything coalesces into just one thing. But here's the way this translator translates the verse. When you understand, you belong to the family. Welcome to the family, we might say. When you understand, you belong to the family. When you do not understand, you are a stranger. those who do not understand belong to this family. And when they understand, they are strangers. It's a very different taste, this verse. Being part of the family and being strangers when we finally understand, or when we understand in some bit, when we come to an understanding of what it means to be a human being, then we become strangers. Strangers to the old life. We like to say when we take refuge in the Buddha and Dharma and Sangha, we become refugees. We leave our old life and become strangers. There's a teaching from another Chinese wisdom book that I've always loved, the I Ching, the Book of Changes. Turns out that in some of the esoteric Zen teachings that we explore late in our koan practice, the I Ching appears as part of the teaching, which I just think is fabulous. Of course, all those people who were creating these teachings knew about the I Ching. And one of the teachings in the I Ching talks about imagining what it's like to be a stranger, to wander through this wide world and not be home. And the I Ching says, if you are in a foreign country and are a stranger, you would have a very different orientation to everything. Everything would be new and strange and different. Everything would require you to meet it as if for the first time, not understanding the language or where to go or what the food tastes like. And this is a little bit what it's like when we deepen our practice of Zen, which all of us are doing simply by being here together in this family we call the Sangha of practice. We experience something that is not what we've known previously. We enter the vast territory of wonder. We enter the territory of the world that is vast and wide. And in this world that's vast and wide, what else is there to do? The bell rings and we put on our robe and we sit. That's it. Nothing more than that. And when we understand, we belong to the family. And those who don't understand belong to the family. And when we don't understand, we are strangers. And when we finally come to an understanding, we are strangers. So this is the invitation that all of us are giving, all of us, to enter the world as a stranger, but all the time knowing, without a doubt, that we are part of this vast family, this wide world. As this translator said, the world is such a wide world. Why do you answer a bell and put on your ceremonial robes? Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable as much as that's possible at this point, and we invite your comments, questions, in our Dharma dialogue. Yes, Cindy.
I love the, then you know when you become a stranger, the stranger to the way you behaved before, the way you thought before. There was the little chink in the armor.
Thank God. Right.
Thank you. Andy?
Confronting the question of letting go of what you disclosed points to that.
Yeah. I think I understand what you're saying. Do you want to say a little more before I pretend to understand?
I've been wandering around all my life trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's been long journey to get to the point to just let it come.
Yeah.
Not that I've arrived.
Yeah. I think this this story is about this trying to figure it out, and it is about how long we've all been wandering. And that wandering, so important, wandering got us here. Trying to figure it out got us here. But this possibility of something falling away or looking someplace else, like under the soles of our feet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something too, isn't there, about I think it was David talking about it yesterday, when we let go, right, and we think we're gonna fall to the bottom of the chasm, and there's just a clip, like a little, just 2 inches down. But we hold on tight. We hold on really tight.
And sometimes we fall to the bottom of the chasm.
Yes, we do.
And we practice on the way down, and we practice in a heap on the ground.
I wanted to ask about the way is vast and wide. I never took that as a feeling of being lost, although obviously that makes sense. But simply, how many choices there are. There's so many things I could be doing, and here I am sitting on the floor of the Zendo.
Yeah. And that's your meaning is the meaning we usually understand. The world is vast and wide, and but this translation's a little bit off.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Points to something else, and that's the wonderful thing about koan practice, mm-hmm. that every time we encounter a koan, it speaks to us more. Yeah. It just keeps opening. Yeah. So even if we think, you know, this is us, early koan from the Gateless Gate, yeah. Right. Whoa, Nelly, no, maybe there's more to discover. Here, the koan practice is vast and wide.
Yeah. I was wondering if you guys could talk more about hearing with your eyes.
What?
No.
It's a synesthesia.
There you go.
Anne.
Oh, you didn't want a smart ass.
Josh has a real answer.
Well, it's like that poem from Basho, hearing the sound of the bell coming from the flowers. Meeting the whole universe arising in its entirety right here. We don't need to send our sight sense out to get it. And we can't even separate hearing from seeing. We can't separate bell from flowers. And so we call that hearing with the eye. And also one way that we invite people to hear the Dharma talks, or to read Dogen, is to allow it to be dark to the mind, if it arises as dark to the mind, and still be able to meet it as radiant to the heart.
Yeah, Brian.
This may not have anything to do with what you're talking about, but I want to thank our timekeeper because he sort of set the tone for me in the beginning when he said, you know, don't cut the corner. And then particularly the thing that rose was this dread because I'm a cut corners kind of guy. But then he said, you know, there's room for all of us in that corner. All the whole sangha can fit in that corner. And it struck me. And as, you know, the invitation of the corner for all of us to come in. And particularly you know, since I try to push away so much of my life, you know, that invitation, which is so filled with such compassion, you know, and you know, Mike saying, you know, just enter that corner. You can bring everything in there. You know, even that guy that cuts corners, you know,
right.
Bring it in. And, you know, really set the tone in such a large way that I can, you know, even if I do let go and I end up in a heap at the bottom of the stairs, you know, I can practice with that.
Right.
You know, when I want to push away and things just are like, you know, I've been in a situation that Melissa, you know, talked about yesterday, and those, you know, there's, our practice is so vast and wide that we can, all of that's there. And it's just sort of, I don't know, if, I just love that. That beginning was perfect for me. That corner, whenever I hit that corner, it just, you know, it's just, when we're walking, it just resounds, you know, what are you bringing there now? What are you bringing in now? You know, the invitation is still open. What do you want? You know, what part of your life are you going to invite in now?
Yeah.
And, so anyway, I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you.
It also reminds me, too, of the invitation to be a stranger. You know, many of us are so afraid of that place, and we sort of want to be connected, want to feel like part of it, but just like there's room in the corner for all of us, the great family of strangers, and not to have to hold anything back. Yeah, not to have to try to work to make some connection or work to get rid of this part of ourself, but to sit up in our total weirdness. You know, each of us a terminal case, no hope, and the great freedom there in the corner, in the strangeness.
And you're also identifying the limitations of any self-definition. I am a cut corners kind of guy. And here you are, walking again and again into the corner. Perhaps you're not a cut corners kind of guy.
Julie.
Yeah, I was, as you were talking, I was reflecting on the ideas of home and then the phrase, not an inch of ground to stand on. That's from one of the koans or sutras or something like that. And I think it was in James Ford's book, In the Present Moment, the little tiny one, he talks a lot about home and Zen practice as coming home. And I found that very appealing in reading it. I think my underlying sense, and still comes up sometimes, is that home is something I've got to kind of earn my way into. Everybody else is there. They've got it except me. And, you know, I've got to kind of work my way into this. So this idea of coming home. And yet, as I was sitting here putting the two together again, it makes perfect sense that it's also, to me, it's the free fall. Free fall and not a piece of ground to stand on. Because if it was something, it could be lost. And since it's not, that home and that family cannot be lost.
Right. That is the unconditional refuge. That is not dependent on causes and conditions, not dependent on somebody and not some other body, not dependent on some state of mind and not some other content of consciousness. Yeah, this is of enormous comfort.
In a bizarre Zen way.
In a bizarre Zen way, she said. Laura, did you have your hand? Oh, I thought Laura Wallace?
Thank you for sharing the other translation. What came up for me was that feeling that has been with me so much of my life of not belonging. When you said stranger, you know, just always feeling like sort of out on the edges of wherever I was, like not in with the in crowd, not in with the, you know. All of that, and the way that it was stated, the way that it was put together, only one family, stranger or not, And that really just touched my heart in a way that the other translation didn't. So thank you.
Mark?
If I may, I want to ask a question about back to the hearing with your eyes and the secret practice.
Hearing with your eyes and the secret practice?
Yes. A slight tangent, but going back to that, it's funny because it struck me because today I was sitting and I've been focusing on being aware of my breath and aware of my body and being physical, and I realized, in my effort to pay perfect attention to the sensations, I created this whole image. This is my breath, and this is what I'm looking at. maybe not based on anatomy, but there's now this mental image that I've constructed, which is now getting in the way of the point. So the reason I say that is that has to do with the hearing with the eyes. Is I wonder what the how do you skillfully get between where you're not holding on to the senses, but you're also not creating an artificial construct?
How do you know?
Yeah.
That's the question.
How do you know, or how do you get there?
How do you get there?
Maybe how do you know? Maybe you see it.
No, how do you get there? That's the real question.
Right? I'll take how do you know.
Yeah. For 10.
You don't get to know.
That's the same answer as how do you get there.
And don't imagine that this is just about eyes and ears. In the Heart Sutra, we say, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no object of sight, and so on. And in Dogen's commentary on the Heart Sutra, he says, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind are six instances of prajna. And all that comes into them, the objects of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, are six instances of prajna. And the consciousness that is aware of them is six instances of prajna. And past, present, and future are three instances of prajna. It is all. And this is the practice of receiving everything into the same one category.
Which is really what these words are pointing to. So it's all the senses are also, don't divide things up. And what you were admitting to is so wonderful, because I think a lot of people do it, the making a mental construct of things. And that does separate, we all do it, and it separates us from the thing itself. And the strategy for getting there is to be very honest about all your strategies until they finally run out, and you see that they're not effective. In fact, they've left you bereft. And this is what we're doing here. This is what Josh was pointing to yesterday. We only start practicing Zen when we've given up everything else, except that we have the secret practices. So that giving up is a long time coming, really a long time coming. And I really want to appreciate these secret practices, because as they get subtler and subtler and subtler, they're more. It's more helpful to see them. I want to be part of the family. I want to be a stranger. I want to be awake. I want to pass a koan. I want. I want. I want. I want. And then I know for myself, I realized at one point, almost every sentence that I think begins with "I want." Or I don't want. So just that's part of the secret practice. It's kind of bringing everything out into the open, into the light, and going, And that, as Brian was pointing out, that's part of it too. It's everything. So even the secret practices, not a problem. Don't have to get rid of them. That's just an idea.
Who's that behind me?
That's Charlie.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Charlie.
So here's where I'm lost. Lost in why the world is. And I have daily homeless people coming into my little psychotherapy office, and I have all the bells. Every sensory input are bells to be responded to. And see how vast and wide the world is, with species going extinct and the climate on the verge of collapse. It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And part of my practice has been to make room for that sense of overwhelm. And that faculty of discernment is not something that I want to do away with. There's so many choices to be made, and when the bell rings, there are habitual responses that are just, I see that first part of the koan in the B.F. Skinner life sometimes. So, they connect to many things, but I'll leave it there and see how you respond.
Well, the first part of this koan is about vast and wide. And then the meat of the koan is exactly what you're saying. So in the face of this, how do we live in the particular world? Not in some kind of undifferentiated experience or undifferentiated idea. So yes, there's choice after choice, and in each moment, when you're in your office, you are only in your office. You cannot be somewhere else. So how to live into our life, this we say vast, undifferentiated, and discrimination. We make two categories. But there's some invitation here. The meat of this is how do we demonstrate it? In fact, when you work on these koans, we're not interested in discrimination and understanding, but a demonstration. And of course, that's what we're doing on the cushion. We're demonstrating our love. We're demonstrating everything. So this is precisely the point. How do we move beyond whatever ideas we have, including ideas about the koan and about this and that?
And this is there's no reason to get rid of discernment. There's no reason to get rid of anything. Everything contributes, so I think we're all saying the same thing in different ways, but if we get fixated on discernment and miss the oneness, that's a problem. If we get fixated on oneness and miss the differentiation, that's a problem. So this is what we're learning how to do, how to be. This is what we're learning how to be. Thank you. Can't see you, so I'm hoping that landed well.
This morning after yoga, I encountered a wave of creative energy and ideas and just intense creative energy, and I literally thought I could publish a book from all the stuff that arose, and I actually have a great book title for it and everything. But this, during this time, I was thinking I need to stay in my practice and not follow this tremendous, like, powerful pull. And yet it took me, you know. And, you know, I was really kind of like, whoa, you know, like, I need to come back. And, you know, eventually it left, and I was flopping on the beach with a great book title and not much else. And I really don't know how this has anything to do with what we're talking about, but it was just, you know, like, I don't know what happens other than that was not me. That was something else.
You know, I think it's very relevant to the koan. So it substitute how vast and wide the world is to with how amazing and creative my mind is. Why do I come back to the zendo and sit? You know, that's partly the question. It's exciting. It's wonderful. I can follow the mind road forever. But and we have this fear that those things will be lost, that great creative energy. You don't have to believe this, but it's been my experience that it doesn't get lost. It might get lost in that particular form, but the energy itself doesn't belong to you, and you'll be able to use it when it's appropriate.
Just like the Sangha gave to me.
Perhaps.
And my experience regarding those just massively awesome ideas that come is that they're often not as awesome as they claim to have been. And this is the practice of receiving all formations with equanimity. It's easy to see why it's valuable to practice equanimity with difficult stuff we'd rather not feel, because we imagine that somehow we can diminish the pain. But it is of utmost importance in our zazen that we receive every arising just as an arising into the same one category, even the arising of volitional formations, striving, intending, aiming, and the subtle mental formations of deep certainties that something is wrong, meeting all of those equally. And if we're not doing that, then zazen just becomes training in grasping and aversion. Thank you, Holly.
You just said it. Really? Thank you.
I just wanted to go back to that idea of strangeness, because I love that translation, and when I think about feeling like a stranger, it's all about separateness. It's all about not belonging and dividing me from the world. And yet, it also has become an incredible gate where suddenly the strangeness is the person's foot in the Kinhin line, and it's like, oh my God, I've never seen a foot. You know, so that the word really is both. It's both this, it can be this awful experience of separateness and then this incredible gateway to intimacy.
And the strangeness that Brian was pointing to. Wait a minute, I was sure I was a cut corners guy.
Yeah.
And the strangeness of meeting ourself. Ah, I've never seen this one before. Yeah. Or I've seen this one 10,000 times, but... Thank you, everyone.